Each month, the Security Ledger podcast informs and entertains an audience of thousands of technology and information security professionals. If that sounds like an audience your company is trying to reach, consider sponsoring one of our podcasts. We offer per-episode sponsorships of our weekly podcasts, which feature news, analysis, and discussion of the most important cybersecurity topics of the day. Or you can commission a custom podcast to highlight your executives, researchers, and subject matter experts. To learn more, point your web browser to securityledger.com/sponsor. Hello, this is the Security Ledger Podcast, and I'm Paul Roberts, Editor-in-Chief at the Security Ledger. In this episode of the podcast, number 194.
We would like to alert the public that we have identified that two foreign actors, Iran and Russia, have taken specific actions to influence public opinion relating to our elections. First, we have confirmed
a closely divided voting public and an election to the world's most powerful office that hangs on a few key districts spread across a handful of states. The geopolitical interests of global powers like China and Russia hanging in the balance. It was a foregone conclusion that the 2020 U.S. presidential election would see one or more cyber incidents grab headlines and just maybe play a part in the final outcome. But 2 weeks after Election Day and more than 140 million counted votes later, predictions of cyber attacks on the U.S. presidential election appear to have fallen flat. Or have they? Did Russia, China, and Iran decide to sit this one out? Or were planned attacks stopped in their tracks? And what about the expected plague of ransomware? Did local governments, short of cybersecurity talent and constrained by budget, actually managed to do just enough to keep cyber criminals and nation-state actors at bay? To find out, we invited two experts who have been following election security closely into the Security Ledger studios to talk. Alan Liska is a threat intelligence analyst at the firm Recorded Future, which has been monitoring the cyber underground for threats to election systems. Also joining us for this episode, Adam Myers, the Senior Vice President of Threat Intelligence at the firm CrowdStrike. CrowdStrike investigated the 2016 attack on Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign and closely monitors a wide range of cyber criminal and nation state groups that have been linked to attacks on campaigns and election infrastructure. To start out, I asked both our guests to explain what happened or didn't happen in 2020, especially given the anticipation of hacking targeting the U.S. presidential election this year.
Alan Liska, intelligence analyst at Recorded Future.
Adam Myers, and I am the SVP of intelligence at CrowdStrike.
So we're on today because, you know, this podcast and others spent a lot of time up to the election talking about the prospect of cyber attacks on election infrastructure, meddling in the conduct or the results of the election. And looking back, hard to see that there was any big cyber disruption that we know of anyway, but I thought I'd check in with you because you guys obviously have your ear to the ground on the cyber underground and what is going on, and ask, what did you see and what do we know about what happened in the period leading up to the election and then after the election? Alan Liska of Recorded Future, let's start with you.
Really, as you say, there wasn't much. There was a whole lot of concern, a whole lot of people that didn't get a lot of sleep in the days and weeks leading up to the election. But it turned out there were some sporadic incidents, but there weren't really any coordinated or massive attacks. Or if there were, they were unsuccessful. And so, you know, we know of the two ransomware attacks, the one against Hall County in Georgia and the one against Chenango County in New York, that slowed down some of the absentee ballot counting, but didn't impact the election. And then we also know of the Iranian attack against voter results page, but again, that didn't disrupt the ability of anybody to vote, and it wasn't actually going to disrupt the ability of votes to be counted. Had they been successful, which it doesn't look like they were all that successful, the worst that would have happened is people would not have known the results on the individual state's election results page.
Adam Myers of CrowdStrike.
No, there wasn't much in terms of actually targeting the supply chain to the election in anything other than, you know, opportunistic. Certainly there was incidents of ransomware that, you know, is pretty widespread. Unfortunately, we see, you know, what we call enterprise ransomware or big game hunting attacks have become extremely prevalent over the last 2 years. And in the last year, one of the major changes we've observed is that the big game hunting actors have taken to actually stealing information and then threatening to, or, you know, actually disclosing the stolen information to the internet through what we call a dedicated leak site. And so one of the concerns leading up to the election that I had was that the ransomware, which is extremely prevalent, could impact a state and local government. It could impact a school district. Two of those things are huge targets for big game hunting. Or, you know, it could potentially impact a technology company engaged in election technology and inadvertently leak sensitive information. One of the primary concerns we had around the influence side of the attacks against the election are what we would call a hack and leak, where they hack in and they steal a bunch of information and then kind of dribble it out, and certainly looking for salacious or embarrassing information. So that was kind of the one concern we had. And I think the thing that was really kept our focus was looking for opportunistic or accidental impacts to the election.
Yeah, and I know prior to the election, I mean, we had done a whole podcast on kind of taking a risk-based approach to election security. And as we all know from, you know, the way the American system works, not all voting districts are equal, right? And that there are actually a small number of incredibly important districts nationally, you know, maybe Obama to Trump swing districts in swing states that matter a lot to the outcome. And then others that, you know, more or less don't matter. You know, they're in safe states and they're more or less safe districts. Do we see any evidence that there was any activity targeted towards those really important kind of swing districts?
Alan Liska of Recorded Future, care to comment on that?
We didn't see any external evidence. We did see that, and CISA has been really, really good at this. CISA combined with the election infrastructure, ISAC, have been really good at sending out alerts to states. We did see that there were some concern about some of attacks because there were bulletins that were constantly being sent out to state and local governments saying, hey, be on the lookout for this. And with these specific indicators, et cetera. So we're pretty sure that there was some activity going on, just nothing that was successful enough to cause concern. You know, send out alerts, yes, but nothing that appeared to have disrupted any election or election infrastructure. We may find out that there were a lot more attacks that we didn't know about that went on behind the scenes that were quickly resolved. But for right now, what it looks like is There were multiple attempted attacks. We don't know on which states, which localities were targeted, but they were presumably thwarted, and the indicators from those attacks shared widely.
Yeah, and CISA is a cybersecurity and infrastructure security agency. That's a fairly new federal presence that can coordinate some of this activity. And they've been very involved in they've taken the point on election and election infrastructure security in the last couple of years. Talk about the role that CISA played in coordinating all of this stuff with, you know, private sector organizations like Recorded Future.
It's really good to see, and they did a phenomenal job. I can't say enough good things about the role that CISA and the EISAC played, the election infrastructure ISAC played in helping to secure this election. So there were a lot of different potential attacks that were thwarted. So, you know, we haven't talked about it yet, but the TrickBot takedown, for example, the week before the election, which was done by Cyber Command and Microsoft and other security companies, and also coordinated through CISA to make sure that states knew what was happening and localities knew what was happening, and more importantly, what indicators they should be looking for. We also know that CISA implemented an EDR pilot program with state and local governments. So according to Chris Krebs, the head of CISA, they had 10,000 workstations involved in this pilot program, which is a big deal. And that they were feeding in indicators specifically from the Center for Information Security and from EIISEC into that EDR pilot program. So, you know, they already have had external scanners through the Albert program, but now adding things on the desktop gave both CISA, the EIISEC, a much better view of what was happening across all state and local governments.
Really interesting. And talk us through that TrickBot takedown. What might have that botnet been used for had it not been targeted and taken down in advance of the actual voting?
TrickBot is part of the three-stage attack posture for the RIAC ransomware. So what you have is you have phishing emails delivered using Emotet, which then deploys either TrickBot, which is a loader, or Bazaar, which is another loader and a more advanced loader. And then TrickBot and Bazaar are ultimately used to deliver the RIAC ransomware. There are a few more stages in between there. So in other words, if CISA or other security companies were worried about state and local governments potentially being hit with the RIAC ransomware right before the election, by taking down that TrickBot infrastructure, anybody who'd been infected with TrickBot, those victims weren't able to call back out to the infrastructure for sort of the next stage. So it potentially, and we don't know this for sure, but it appears that at least it may have disrupted a number of victims from being infected with the RIAC ransomware, which could have been huge. Given the timing of it, we're pretty confident that it was that it was designed to prevent election infrastructure attacks. But we don't know that for sure, and we may never know that. Someday somebody may spill the beans as to exactly what the goal was, but the timing so close to the election appears that those two are connected.
Adam Myers of CrowdStrike, your thoughts?
Well, I mean, it was in September, towards the end of September, that the operation to disrupt TrickBot occurred. We observed that it didn't have a complete effect against the TrickBot infrastructure. The adversary behind TrickBot that we track is Wizard Spider remained active throughout. We've actually seen them kind of working to increase their capabilities, and we've seen further distribution. In fact, just a few weeks later, the Ryuk ransomware payload, which is typically delivered by the Wizard Spider actor through TrickBot, became the subject of quite a bit of concern around targeting of healthcare. And so, you know, I think it's pretty obvious that the actor was not stymied or impacted in any meaningful way by that disruption.
And Adam, just for our listeners, Wizard Spider, tell us what is behind that APT name.
So Wizard Spider is a criminal actor, financially motivated. They've been operating since in this capacity since 2016 with their TrickBot malware, which was initially something that they were using for bank fraud. They were stealing credentials and trying to do browser injection and things like that. And in 2017, 2018, they kind of saw that there was more money to be made through big game hunting and enterprise ransomware than there was through stealing of credentials and then trying to sell them. And so they pivoted, but like many other e-crime groups that were engaged in bank fraud, they took their existing tool set and kind of modified it for this new mission. And so they took TrickBot and used it as an initial intrusion tool. And once TrickBot would land in the environment, they would then use kind of pen testing tools, things like Meanycats and PowerShell and stuff like that to move laterally to other machines to escalate privileges so that they could have, say, domain credentials. And then they would deploy their ransom payload, which was based on a kind of publicly available ransom tool, which has been dubbed Ryuk, which comes from a manga series titled Death Note. And Ryuk became the predominant tool they were using for doing these cryptographic ransomware attacks. Now, at some point over this past summer, they kind of moved away from Ryuk to a certain extent and started moving into another tool they have called Conti. And Conti was is another ransom payload, but this one we actually observed them also stealing information and then disclosing it through a dedicated leak site. So this actor has been operating for many, many years and has has quite a bit of tradecraft and know-how that they bring to the party.
The NSA director, General Nakasone, was quoted in an article with the following comment. Foreign adversaries continue to see an opportunity to undermine our nation's elections. However, we have the capability, capacity, and will to prevent any type of interference or influence in our elections. I'm confident the actions we've taken against adversaries over the past several weeks and months have ensured that they're not going to interfere in our elections. When it comes to those who threaten our democratic processes, we are equal opportunity disruptors. We're going to take action against any nation, state, or actor who attempts to interfere in our elections. That's a hell of a quote. And I wonder what the general is referring to there. It's certainly nothing that I've seen reported, although definitely have heard hinted at. But I wonder if you can shed any light on that.
So when it comes to nation state activity, it's difficult to know exactly what's going on in terms of service disruption. But if you take, again, the TrickBot example of that kind of disruption, adversaries do the same thing. So we know what kind of infrastructure Russian adversaries, Iranian adversaries, Chinese adversaries like to use. And like the rest of us, hackers are lazy. They will reuse the same infrastructure, if not necessarily the exact same infrastructure, but they have certain types of infrastructure that they like to use and reuse and so on for launching campaigns. So knowing that, you could disrupt Iranian activity, Russian activity, Chinese activity. It's expensive, it's costly, and you can't always do it for a long period of time because they can then rebuild infrastructure other places. But again, if you time those attacks, so if you wanted to just make sure they couldn't disrupt the election, if you time the attacks on our end, our offensive capabilities, especially within the NSA, our offensive capabilities are unparalleled when it comes to cybersecurity. So the things that we can do, no other nation state can do it as well as we can. To the best of my knowledge, we're much more judicious in how we use it than other nation states are. But when it's focused on a singular mission, we're going to be able to disrupt a lot of adversary work in a way that adversaries can't disrupt our work.
So when it comes to nation state actors, I mean, you mentioned China, Iran, Russia, obviously, maybe North Korea. Should we assume that they sat this one out, again, that they got the message coming from the federal government, from the U.S. government, military, to stay away? Or alternatively, that they tried some stuff but were turned back and that whatever attacks they were interested in carrying out were detected and therefore not successful?
Adam Myers of CrowdStrike.
Well, I don't know that you can necessarily assume that either of those things is true. One thing that I will point out that I think is really important for us to talk about is the fact that election security is not, or election interference is not just a U.S. problem. This is a global problem. We've seen this in Kyrgyzstan. We've seen this in the U.K. We've seen this in Paraguay, all across Europe. We've seen this in Hong Kong. We've seen this in Finland. So, you know, election security is becoming an increasing concern, and it's a thing that many adversaries have begun attacking because it helps them to cause distrust in the system, which is, I think, ultimately what they're looking to do.
So let's just talk a little bit about one of the interesting characteristics of this year's election, which was early voting and mail-in voting, obviously because of COVID and people's concerns about being exposed to the virus. It complicated things in many ways, especially in regard to counting votes. But I'm interested in your thoughts on how that development impacted kind of the risk profile of the election itself, and in perhaps in ways to, you know, lessen the impact of any election day disruptions, given how many people had already voted. In fact, in some states, you know, more than 100% of the 2016 vote had already voted by November 3rd.
Alan, your thoughts?
So, right, we went from election day to election season. And that definitely makes a difference because now it's harder to isolate an attack. So, you know, we've always said that a ransomware attack on a voter registration database on the day of the election is the least effective way to do it, because by then everything's already distributed, everybody has it, nobody needs the voter registration database that day. But there were days in the days leading up to election day in previous years, in days leading up to the day of the election, there were some really good times where you could have launched a ransomware attack. Here, it would have been much more difficult because early voting went out, or mail-in ballots, excuse me, went out significantly earlier than usual. And with the constant early voting, so the two-week stream of early voting in many states, or sometimes even longer, there wasn't a good time that would have been fully disruptive. You may have stopped voting for a day or two, early voting for a day or two, but it wouldn't have disrupted the ability of people to vote at all. So I think that also threw it off. We've talked in our reporting, ransomware actors have gotten really good at understanding how our systems work. So for example, we always see a rise in ransomware attacks right around the start of the school year because the ransomware actors know if I hit you on right near the first day of school, you'll either be forced to delay the start of school or you'll have to pay the ransom so that school delays aren't, or so you don't have to delay the start of the school. Well, if you're a ransomware actor and you had in mind, I need to hit you either November 3rd or a couple of days before November 3rd, and then the pandemic threw everything off, and now we didn't even know as voters often when we were allowed to vote and when it could happen. So that made it even more confusing for the ransomware actors. So I do think that that uncertainty made it harder to plan an attack if you were even able to do so.
Adam Myers of CrowdStrike.
Well, you know, I think the thing is that these elections are taking place over much longer periods of time, even before COVID. You know, the electoral process, the news coverage of the, you know, the primaries and of the actual kind of mechanics of people getting to the polls and the advertising and the social media cycles around all of this, you know, it's much longer tail. In fact, we've been talking about election security as it pertains to the 2020 presidential election for well over a year. And, you know, frankly, it's been over 4 years that we've been talking about it now since 2016. So, you know, I think that this is now a continuing process. And so, you know, we are already looking to what the threats, you know, could be to runoff elections in January or to the midterm elections in 2022. I mean, this is a continuous thing that we have to be vigilant as practitioners and as Americans and global citizens of democracy. We need to be very vigilant about protecting the electoral process. And it you know, we can't stop just because the election is over. We need to be continuously watching and engaging and making sure that we are keeping our eyes open for any indication of adversary activity, whether that be espionage, disinformation, misinformation, or disruptive activity.
We should also note, I mean, there's been so much attention over the last decade and a half to, you know, DRE voting machines, direct report electronic voting machines, many of which came around after the Help America Vote Act, after the 2000 election, you know, debacle. Come 2020, you know, 20 years later, I'd have to say, looking across the country, paper ballots seem to be the go-to, especially in this pandemic season with mail-in voting. So that also complicates things from a in terms of actually disrupting or altering the vote.
Right. So, altering the vote is the most difficult thing that whether you're a nation state or cyber criminal or whatever, that would have been the most difficult thing to do anyway. But as more and more states have adopted Scantron voting and other type of election infrastructure that has by law a paper trail requirement, that does absolutely make it more difficult to alter any voting or anything like that. And that was already, again, really, really, really difficult to do. And that was the one thing I think people in security were the least worried about, because that is hard to do. I mean, I know you'll see YouTube videos that show happening, but YouTube isn't always real life.
No. Really?
I'm sorry.
No, really?
I know.
YouTube's not real. Yeah.
That was always the most difficult thing to do. But the paper ballots make it extremely challenging, because you'd have to do it in a way that wouldn't be suspicious, that wouldn't automatically trigger a recount. And because we've seen it, we see this with every election, mistakes always happen, and then they get corrected because of all the audits that are in place in the system. Yeah. And you always have, when you see these mistakes happen, oh my God, they hacked it. No, they were mistakes. There's, I think we're almost at 170 million people voted. When 170 million people do anything, mistakes are going to happen.
In a system run by human beings, right?
Right, so, exactly.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it is a chaotic event. So I think there's been, at least at the editorial level, I think there's been criticism of the Trump administration over the last 4 years for not seeming to take the Russian interference in the 2016 election very seriously, and seeming to be dragging its heels on, putting resources towards shoring up the security of the election system. That said, when you kind of look under the covers, a bit below the sort of, West Wing level, a lot has happened. And the government, as we talked about CISA earlier, have put in a lot of processes and programs to address some of these cybersecurity issues. I'm interested just kind of in your thoughts on what we've accomplished between 2016 and today, and maybe what needs, we've got a new administration coming in, what you think the high priority issues are going forward that need to be addressed, specifically regarding election and voting security.
Adam Myers of CrowdStrike, let's hear from you.
Oh, I think that CISA and the other U.S. government agencies have been really upping their game. We've seen an unprecedented level of information sharing from the federal government, and I think that they are really kind of, it took them a little while to kind of figure out what their strategy was going to be, but I think they're doing a fantastic job, and I commend them on what they're doing. And, CrowdStrike is here to support them in any way we can. I know we certainly want to help all of our customers and all of our government customers across the globe to be better at what they're doing and really kind of enable them to be more effective. So, anything that we can do to help them out, we try to do. But they've really just been doing a great job lately.
Alan, thoughts on that?
So I think there's been a divergence. I agree with your assessment that the political part of the Trump administration hasn't taken the Russian threat as seriously as the people in the security community would like. However, the Department of Justice has been taking it very seriously. The NSA has taken it very seriously. The CIA and the CISA obviously has taken all of DHS has taken that very seriously. So I think we need to separate those two things. There has been some election security funding.
You mean the deep state, Alan?
Well, I'm sorry. Yes, the deep state. The deep state has
let's just call it by its name, won't we?
Right. Yes, the deep state is doing everything they can to keep the country safe from Russia and China and Iran and all the others.
And the deep state is just a kind of nefarious term for, the permanent government,
right.
The bureaucracy and the sort of people who, regardless of the administration, keep the work of government going, year in, year out. But anyway, go ahead. Yeah.
Yes. And that's exactly right. They don't operate in a political sphere. I mean, to some extent, everybody does if you work in the government, but they operate based on the facts on the ground. And this is what they do going forward. And they've done a really good job there. There also has been some election security funding that has gone through in the terms of grants. So that's managed to pass both the House and the Senate. And that's been somewhat of a help. It hasn't been as big of a help as some of the election security funding bills that were passed by the House but sort of died in the Senate late last year and early this year. So a lot of the election security money that's been coming has been essentially coming in form of grants from DHS and again from CISA to, you know, directly to the states and county local governments. Again, just an incredible thank you to CISA, to the EISAC, and to all of the people who work for state and local governments in IT and security who just did not sleep for the week before the election. You know, we as a country owe you a lot of thanks for all of the hard work you did, often with very little resources. And you know, hopefully we can get that changed going forward. So you'll, unfortunately, the week before the election, you'll never get any sleep, but at least you can hopefully have the resources you need so you don't feel like you're running behind.
Yeah, I mean, I think with all the turmoil and tumult, I think one of the things that has been really heartening and the you know, kind of deep political divides is just seeing these kind of, you know, local officials and state officials just sort of quietly doing their job, you know, collecting the votes, counting the votes, reporting the results, and, you know, just not going there, you know, just being professionals and getting the vote counted and reported. And, you know, that is the strength of the democracy, that we've got all these basically nameless officials out there who take their work very seriously, regardless of party, and want to make sure that the vote is accurate.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of my favorite viral videos of the election is the election administrator in Las Vegas making his announcement while some random lunatic is raving behind him. And he looks at the guy and goes right on with what he had to say.
That was the, like, what was it, barbecue, beer, yeah. Barbecue, and yeah.
Beer, barbecue, and freedom is the t-shirt.
Hey, Alan Lisk of Recorded Future, thank you so much for coming on and speaking to us on Security Ledger Podcast. We'll have you on again.
It sounds good. I'm happy to be on anytime.
Adam Myers at CrowdStrike, thanks for coming in and talking to us about election security on Security Ledger Podcast, and we'll have you back again soon.
Thanks. Great talking to you.
Alan Liska is a threat intelligence analyst at the firm Recorded Future. Adam Myers is the Senior Vice President of Threat Intelligence at the firm CrowdStrike.